Oh, hi there. It's MP Fitzgerald, and I'm still pretending to play the jazz piano. If you like a happy bureaucracy, you're sure to love Death Incorporated, a people of color run dark sci-fi comedy about a dystopian corporate afterlife. This shit is mandatory. Check it out.
DeHito Productions presents.
I take it you don't remember anything after boarding the plane either?
Right. We're dead.
Season 1 of Death Incorporated.
Jesse! Where the shit are you?
Zoe!
Starring Evan Schwartz and Joy Ireland.
Death is forever. That to me is so much better than any sudden change.
Unbelievable. You want to stay in this literal ghost town because of Katy Perry? Katy fucking Perry.
Featuring Dawn Reed.
Her and I actually get along really well. Best friends, you could say.
Sam, it's Colleen.
Fucking decline.
And Charles Taylor.
Voice mode activated for level A interactions. You died peacefully. How can I help you?
Death Incorporated. Narrated by Helena Reed.
Join us on all podcast platforms or at deathinc.rip.
The pretend jazz piano keeps on playing and I can't stop it. Somebody help me. But seriously, this podcast is awesome. Check them out. Nobody's paid me to say this. They're freaking awesome. You can find them anywhere that podcasts are available, or you can find them at www.deathinc.rip. All right, and now for something completely different.
A Happy Bureaucracy by MP Fitzgerald. Narrated by Gary Bennett. Author's note. Strewn between drug use, groin malice, and cursing on a level tantamount to sacrilege are gratuitous mentions of bureaucracy. These bureaucratic references may not be for the weak of heart. Chapter 3. Before Arthur could fully enter the office of Deputy Commissioner for Operations Support, Henry S. Boyd, he was urgently pushed aside by a man with a hot mug of coffee. Without a word, this man, who looked like everyone else in the bunker, marched toward the steel desk of the Deputy Commissioner. When he reached the desk, he dutifully picked up an identical but empty mug and replaced it with the mug of coffee he was carrying. In a moment, this man pivoted, marched back toward Arthur, and left an initial on a clipboard pinned to the inside of the door. Next, he wrote the date and time and was gone as abruptly as he came. He left behind a stunned Arthur and a distracted-looking deputy commissioner. 15 seconds of silence reigned supreme before the digital readout above the door read, 2 o'clock exactly. Henry S. Boyd looked up at Arthur from his desk and smiled briefly.
Come in, he said.
Arthur obliged and moved into the interior of the office. Henry S. Boyd's office was meticulous beyond reason. It was a full 2 feet smaller on each side than the emergency fire exit map that was laminated permanently to the outer hall indicated. This was not a clerical error on the fire marshal's part. It only appeared to be smaller because where there should be walls were, in fact, gray steel filing cabinets stacked on top of each other, filling every inch from floor to ceiling. There was not a single free millimeter of space between them and the concrete floor and ceiling in which they were contained. If Arthur had not already memorized the fire exit plan from the map and had not seen the dimensions himself, it would be far from a stretch to believe that the walls were the filing cabinets themselves, used as a mad and makeshift bricking substitute. The only thing that did not appear to be symmetrical in this tomb for files was a single rolling library ladder, which was parked at the back of the office. It occurred to Arthur that had Boyd built this office above ground, any windows that already existed would likely be blocked by the cabinets. It occurred to Arthur that, visually, there would be no difference. Centered in the office was Henry S. Boyd himself, sitting at his desk. The only blemish in the office was Arthur, still dusty from the audit that morning. The Deputy Commissioner for Operations Support, Henry S. Boyd, was a tall man, and it was hard for Arthur to imagine he ever needed to use the ladder to reach what he wanted. Aside from being tall, he was an oddity in the United Wastes, as he appeared to be in his late 50s. No one grew old in this new cruel world. His high forehead looked like it was designed to hold a couple extra worry lines than the average man was capable of forming. It was topped with graying, thinning hair that looked as if it had never moved a strand in a decade. He sported a broom-like mustache as equally gray as his hair that had done a considerable job at hiding his upper lip. He stared at Arthur, his brow furrowed, bringing his starkly black eyebrows closer than they should ever be allowed to go. This is a face that could sue a grandfather clock for plagiarism. Henry S. Boyd broke eye contact first, probably because of boredom more than anything else. As Arthur walked towards the deputy commissioner, Mr. Boyd moved a solitary plastic technical ruler from the left side of his desk and measured the distance between his new coffee mug and his computer monitor. As Arthur found himself at rest, a safe but still intimate 4 feet from the desk, Mr. Boyd then measured the distance between his monitor and where the ruler used to be and placed the ruler back in its position, contented. Mr. Arthur T. McDowell, currently assigned as Auditor A24, reporting on time, sir, said Arthur, fighting the urge to salute. The deputy commissioner looked back up at Arthur from his ruler, and the faintest of smiles betrayed the cover of his mustache.
So you are, and currently, indeed. I have summoned you to my humble office in regards to your current position, my boy. But first I have a question for you, he responded with no muster.
Arthur McDowell's heart sang in anticipation.
I am being promoted.
Of course, sir, anything, he said. Henry S. Boyd gulped down half of his coffee, measured it back to its proper spot with his ruler, and then did the same for the ruler. Then, with his hands clasped and his elbows on the table, an eyebrow divorced itself from the other and was raised inquisitively.
What is it that we do here, my boy? He asked, lips still wet from the coffee.
The question was deceptive in how unnecessary it was, and Arthur did not understand why it came across as menacing. We audit the populace to collect taxes from individuals, as well as businesses and organizations, so that the United States government can run, Arthur stated, and then hurriedly added, Sir. Neither seemed bothered at that moment that there was no government of any kind left that wasn't smoldering in a crater.
Indeed, indeed, said Boyd. That is about 2/3 of what we do. But as you are surely aware, we have taken on additional duties since the war. The Revised National Emergency Operations Manual states that the responsibility of census-taking is one of our primary duties. Given your shining accolades here with the IRS, I will assume that this lapse of knowledge is a result of a generation gap instead of willful ignorance, as there has not been a census since your childhood. But our duties have been a cycle of census-taking, auditing, and collecting. This, of course, brings us to your status as an auditor.
He downed the other half of his coffee. A few seconds after the mug hit the desk and was measured once more, a woman with a black tie and black skirt raced into the office with a full mug of coffee. Like the man before her, she replaced the empty mug with the new one and logged herself and the date on the door's clipboard. As quickly as she entered, she was gone, and Arthur found that a heavy dread had replaced his hopeful anticipation. He could only muster a single, Sir? Before Boyd continued his speech.
It is an unfortunate reality of our job in this great workplace, my boy. But with the Census Bureau and much of our government lax, he used lax as a synonym for nuclear cinder, we have to take up much of the slack. We cannot audit if we do not know where people live, and we don't know where they live unless we find them. And we must find them. Am I not being promoted, sir? Arthur asked meekly, his fear manifesting in goose flesh and cold hands. Another round of measuring the items on Boyd's desk ensued, the silence from him a solid punctuation mark to Arthur's question. He downed half of his coffee and avoided eye contact. He could guess what was about to happen, and though he had a mouth, he could not bring himself to scream the vulgarities he needed to at this injustice. He should be wailing at the commissioner, demanding that he change his mind. He should be throwing cabinets open in impotent protest. Instead, he waited quietly, like he was supposed to. The mug measured once more, and everything in its proper place, the deputy commissioner broke the silence.
Look, I know how you must feel about this. You are one of our greatest agents, and, truth be told, if circumstances were different, you would probably have my job someday. You deserve a promotion, and I know how terrible not getting that is.
His voice was soft and fatherly.
Mr. McDowell, I have been gunning for full commissioner my whole life, a position that will not be mine until Commissioner DeWitt steps down or retires, something he is not likely to do. Like you, I don't make the rules. If it were up to me, tomorrow we would both hold the titles we deserve.
Likely intuiting the tears and protest Arthur was keeping at bay, Boyd continued softly.
I know it's not just the promotion. I know that your father died in the last great census.
Your file says he was killed by a militia of cannibals? Arthur nodded. Instantly, empathy left the deputy commissioner's face, and a cold business tone was applied to his voice.
You're being assigned a new enforcer by the name of Duke. They have been contracted with us for a full tax season.
Arthur's mind swam with emotions. What is happening? Repeated like a mad mantra. No promotion, and an enforcer contracted from the outside? What is happening? He was not sure which, if any, of the details he should challenge, and so he settled on the last offense. A contracted enforcer, sir?
Yes. It is an unfortunate reality that many of our internal enforcers have a high mortality rate, Boyd replied. As of last season, we have been contracting outside protection from the United Wastes in the hope to fill their gaps. Enforcer Duke has performed admirably and has been optioned for a permanent position as enforcer should the census go well. Effective immediately, you are being conscripted as a census taker with the ultimate charge to administer the census in an as-of-yet-unknown territory.
The deputy commissioner finished the other half of his coffee and fulfilled his measuring ritual while Arthur drowned in desperation. His dreams of being safe were gone. The last census was one of the most brutal events in the IRS's history. The revised National Emergency Operations Manual was explicitly clear on the conscripting of an agent. Anyone, no matter their position or current pay grade, could be enlisted into census taking if the Deputy Commissioner of Operations saw it fit. From executive to janitor, any employee of the IRS could be reassigned for essential functions. Census taking was undoubtedly an essential function of the post-war IRS. But in an instant, Henry S. Boyd had not only put Arthur's dreams to death, he had put Arthur to death.
The IRS needs to expand its reach, Mr. McDowell, Boyd stated. We have settled on collecting in this single state because our need to survive had to be met first. Now that we are floating in better waters, and now that operations are at their peak since the war, it is our duty to serve the rest of the Union. you will be performing a key role in this responsibility. By the end of this meeting, you are to report to Vehicle Bay 13 to collect a van for your journey, the assigned rations, and your new enforcer. By the end of the day, I expect you to be on your way outside of our known territory and into one of the adjacent states. The details of the area for your census are being shipped to Vehicle Bay 13 as we speak. Boyd looked at his coffee. Upon completion of the census, you will return with the supervising position you so deserve. I am sorry, Arthur. This is only a detour in your career, but all detours lead back to your rightful destination. Arthur wanted to shout. Arthur should shout. But a sense of duty prevented him. Mr. Boyd continued, "Personally, I do not expect this to be like last time. We are only being thorough, but the area should be nearly empty. I would not expect anything more dangerous than you have already experienced. If you were any other agent, I would be worried. But there should be no more than a few scattered families, at worst a tribe. Raider country is in the opposite direction." Arthur felt some relief, not a lot, but enough to quiet his most dire of fears. The door opened and a man with red hair holding a replacement mug of coffee rushed in, almost spilling it. He gathered the old mug, and before he could pivot, the deputy commissioner yelled, "You're late!" and stamped the word infraction on a pink slip from his desk. The man looked sullenly at the floor, took the pink slip from the deputy commissioner, and filled out his name and time on the door. Before the red-haired man left, he said in a shaky voice, "It won't happen again, sir." "I know," the deputy commissioner whispered, and the red-haired man left. Ruler to mug, ruler to an empty spot, and then mug to mouth, Henry S. Boyd drank greedily. It was the most coffee Arthur had ever seen someone consume. "Honestly, this is good news," Mr. Boyd reported to Arthur. "With this census, our operation may expand, and when completed, you will find yourself supervising a new generation of auditors to the new region. Think of yourself as a pioneer to a new world, my boy. I wouldn't trust this mission to just anybody. You are the most competent auditor I have seen in years, and once this is done, I am sure you will be a competent supervisor." Arthur was conflicted in his emotions. Boyd was giving him praise and a promise for the very job that would help him grow old. But for now, he had to work with an outsider on a job that had doomed his father. It was hard to tell how much of this was genuine disdain at his circumstances and how much was hurt pride. The deputy commissioner himself had said that this should not be dangerous. After all, census taking was just filling out a questionnaire. It was not nearly as intense as auditing. He wouldn't be threatening to take from the desperate, only counting the needy. Yes, this was unexpected. But wasn't it an honor to serve the IRS? Wouldn't a last foray into a sparsely populated wasteland to herald a new era in tax collection only cement his legacy and help him move upward from supervisor? Arthur McDowell looked into the eyes of the deputy commissioner, whose warm smile now betrayed the cover of his gray mustache once more. "I trust only the best for this mission," he said. Only the best. This flattery had done it for Arthur. This wasn't what he had wanted. But his hero, the personification of bureaucracy, of civility in a cruel wasteland, had just referred to him as the best. He had to live up to that. He couldn't disappoint the deputy commissioner. The fact was that no matter how he felt about it, Arthur had no choice but to do his job. But he could now do it with a little pride. It was a bitter pride, but pride nonetheless. "You can count on me, sir," Arthur reported with half-reluctant gusto. Henry S. Boyd looked down at his desk. "Good," he said, as he signed a white slip of paper, confirming their meeting, and handed it to Arthur for his signature. Arthur clicked his pen and signed his name with a flourish. Seconds later, the deputy commissioner peeled out the yellow carbon copy and handed him it, his second autograph of the day. You should find Enforcer Duke waiting for you in Vehicle Bay 13, said Boyd. The van master should have you pumped and ready. Godspeed and good luck, my boy. This time in 4 days, I hope to see you here again at my desk, as a supervisor, to auditors number A1 to number A24. This would put him in charge of Ralph and would ensure his safety. Thank you, sir, was all Arthur could manage. His career was stalled, but only temporarily, and for a cause that he believed in. It was hard for him to think that just moments ago he had felt so deflated and had believed that certain doom was ahead of him. As Arthur walked out of Henry S. Boyd's office, he was met with the tearful sobs of the red-haired man who dared to be late in the deputy commissioner's scheduled consumption of coffee. The man was shaking, the pink slip crumpled. Arthur gave him no regard as he left and made the trek back to his desk before heading out to the vehicle bay. He was too consumed with his own thoughts to notice that the man with red hair trailed closely behind. Anytime Arthur was confronted with disappointment, anytime that terrible dread at his new dire chore threatened to surface, he would repeat those three magic words in his head. Only the best.
About the author. M.P. Fitzgerald is an author and humorist dedicated to injecting the feverish gonzo style into fiction. You can get Memos from the Wasteland, which is the official prequel to this book, free. It contains hilariously bleak office drama, Robbie's diary, and Arthur's last letter from his father. To get your copy, just head over to his website at mpfitzgerald.art. You'll also get free updates on future audiobooks and more. We hope you have enjoyed A Happy Bureaucracy by M.P. Fitzgerald, narrated by Gary Bennett. Text copyright 2019 by M.P. Fitzgerald. Production copyright 2021 by M.P. Fitzgerald.
Music by Dustmice. Available on all streaming services and dustmice.bandcamp.com.